Good afternoon. My name is Randy Simonson. I'm with Helena Chemical, and our next presentation will be by Steve Petrie, and he's with Yara. And the topic today is nitrogen management planning in California. Okay, we're going to talk about nutrient or nitrogen management planning in California. How many of you are from California? Two. Okay. Well, I'm going to start out with a little bit of an overview of California agriculture, because if you're not familiar with it, it takes a while to get a grasp of the scale and the complexity and the diversity and so forth. And so I'm going to spend the first few minutes of my talk going through that, so that will place what I say later in the proper context. There's about 76,000 farms in California in 2014, 25 million acres of cropland, average value, and this is a, there's wide variation around this average value of $7,400 an acre to three or four times that much in very select areas with specific environmental characteristics. The top 20 crop and livestock commodities, a little more than $43 billion, that's with a B in farm gate value. So when we talk about nitrogen management in California, I'm going to talk about water. And again, I'm going to give some background information. I'm going to talk about crops in California. I'm going to talk about nitrogen in groundwater, because that's really what's driving all of this activity about nitrogen management. Talk about the regulatory environment. Then talk about nitrogen management planning. And finally, some of the future issues and challenges that we're going to face in California. In California, you don't say irrigated agriculture, you simply say agriculture, because there is no other in California, unless you count the dry land range and the cows. But basically, all of California is irrigated. And the reason for that, and I'll point to my right, if you look at the scale, the darkest is 0 to 5 inches, and the next is 5 to 10 inches of rain, and an awful lot of California is pretty dark red. This is San Francisco, L.A. down here. That's the great San Joaquin Valley and Sacramento Valley. Together, that forms the great Central Valley of California. Almost all of that is 5 to 10 inches of rain or less. There's some wetter up here in the Sacramento Valley, but still not enough to come close to meeting the ET demands, and so irrigation is absolutely essential. We've seen a great shift in the last 15 years in irrigation. Picture some drip irrigated almonds, drip irrigated cabbage, subsurface drip irrigated tomatoes. Concerns about drought. This was the first year out of the last six that we had normal rainfall in California. I actually should say they had normal rainfall, because I live up in Washington, but when you work for a fertilizer company, you spend a lot of time in California for reasons I'll show a lot later. So subsurface drip tomatoes. I talked to a researcher last spring and wanted to locate a field of non-buried drip tomatoes, and he could not find one. Essentially, all of the tomatoes in California are grown with buried drip. Growers are even using buried drip for alfalfa because of all the stuff that Sandra talked about last night. California is a desert. Less than 10 inches in most of the ag areas. The whole of California agriculture is dependent on dams and canals that move the water from where it is to where it needs to be for agriculture. The Central Valley Project, there's a host of federal and state and other projects, and I'm not going to talk about those at all, but those form the real basis and the background for California farming. Typical water use, and these vary depending whether you're talking the south end of the San Joaquin Valley up to the Sacramento Valley because of the ET demands and so forth. Almonds gets a bad name, but 3 to 4.5 acres of water, of acre feet for a crop, again, depending on where it's located and so forth. Citrus, you can read these numbers, but the one that's interesting is lettuce on the central coast. Drip is 1 to 1.5 feet, and again, depends on when during the cropping season we're talking about. Is that a winter lettuce or a fall or spring lettuce? Sprinkler is a little more. furrow, and there is still some furrow irrigated lettuce, but it's a probably not 5 fields you'd have to find hard, 2.5 feet. Then you go to the southern end of the San Joaquin Valley where there is some winter lettuce grown, and there the much higher levels because, and I'll touch on this later, the San Joaquin River or the San Joaquin water is much saltier. They have to build in leaching fractions and so forth, and so there's more water that's applied to that crop. And pistachios, tomatoes, you can read the numbers for yourself. As you can see, there's a fair amount of water that goes on some of these crops. Even that, though, urban California, the 39 million people that live here in California, use about 10% of the water. Agriculture uses 40% of the water, and there's still 50% of the water that's used for the environment. Now, certain environmental groups will tell you that agriculture uses 90% of the water. That's not true. Agriculture uses 40% of the water. Of the water that is used by people, agriculture uses more than urban. But the largest use of water in California is still for environmental purposes. Now, talk a little bit about crops. California leads the nation, is not necessarily dominant, but it leads the nation in the production of everything from almonds to watercress, meaning that's the largest single state. And in those crops which are highlighted, California provides 99% or more of that crop. So when you talk almonds and artichokes and dates, there is no other place than California. For stuff like safflower and raspberries, it's the leading producer, but it may not be 99% like it is in some of these crops. In addition, there's 42 other crops for which California is the leading state in the nation for producing that particular crop. I just didn't want to try to fit that all on one slide. Look at cash receipts. This is 2014. I think these figures would have gone up in 2015. There were a number of commodities which were priced higher in 15 than 14, but that data is not available. California cash farm gate receipts for crops. This is not for animals. This is for crops. $53 billion with a B dollars. That's almost the same as Iowa plus Nebraska added together. If you look at individual crops, almost $6 billion in almonds. So we look back and almonds use a lot of water. Yeah, they do, but boy, they make a lot of money too. Grapes, over $5 billion in grapes. And I've lumped all grapes together. That's table grapes, raisin grapes, and wine grapes. Over $2.5 billion in berries, strawberries, raspberries, and so forth. $2 billion of citrus. There's $1 billion of cut flowers in California. If we look at the export value, $4.5 billion of almonds are exported to some other place in the world out of California. Walnuts, $1.5 billion. Wine, $1.5 billion. Wine gets all the press. Almonds gets all the money. And you can look at the rest down through there. $500 million worth of strawberries are exported. If we look at individual counties, Tulare County, the largest ag county in California, over $8 billion in sales last year. I would challenge a lot of states to have more ag value than Tulare County. Kern, Fresno, Merced. The key that I want to come back to in a future slides is four of those are in the San Joaquin Valley, and one of those is on the Central Coast. And again, keep in mind as I go through here, there's a reason that we're having to deal with nitrogen management, but some of it is when we have $8 billion worth of agriculture produced in one county. So, nitrogen in the water, you know, is there a problem or is it just hype? How big is the problem if there is one, and what's agriculture's contribution to that problem? I'm not going to spend much time on this. This is not the data that shows all the wells that have been sampled by any stretch. There's an awful lot of green or what would be green wells where there's not nitrate contamination. But if you look at California, that's basically northern to southern California, and the filtering mechanism on the search pulled out the low wells. But you can see that, yes, there's a lot of green wells. There's just a few that snuck in there. Basically, though, there are certainly a substantial number of wells that are contaminated with nitrate, and there's a substantial number that are potentially contaminated with nitrate. If we zoom in a little bit on the San Francisco to LA, the Great Central Basin, and the coastal region of California, again, the same pattern exhibits here. We see lots of red and yellow. And if we focus in on the central coast, again, we see mostly red and yellow, but some green. Now, again, I want to stress that this does not mean that all the wells are contaminated, but the filtering mechanism for this map search pulled out these wells. It's still way less than half, but there is a substantial number that are contaminated. So is there a problem? Yes. How big is the problem? It's substantial. And what's agriculture's contribution? It's significant. And some of that is animal agriculture, but work at UC Davis pretty clearly shows that a substantial portion of that is fertilizer nitrogen or nitrogen from growing crops. Okay, in response to that reality then, there's in California a law called the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program, which the law was passed to basically drive irrigation water use quality and groundwater quality. The State Water Quality Control Board uses the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program as the authority to do what they do, and they then delegate that down to 9 regional water quality control boards. And the water quality control boards at the regional level are semi-autonomous. And I say semi-autonomous because there's 9 of them, and they have developed different nitrogen management plans depending on their particular situation, but they have to be approved ultimately by the State Water Board. We're going to focus in on 2 of those this afternoon. The first is the Central Coast Water Quality Board, which is the vegetable producing area of the Central Coast. And then the Central Valley, which is, again, if this will work, the area from the Sacramento Valley and the San Joaquin Valley, the Great Central Valley of California, the 2 most important agricultural areas. There are other water quality control boards. I'm not going to get into those at all today. So, Central Coast, intensively managed high-value irrigated fruit and vegetable production. Things like strawberries and raspberries and blackberries, vegetables like cabbage and celery and lettuce, and a host of other specialty crops with very rigorous quality standards that start with the consumer and go through the grocery store to the packer and back to the grower. And greenness matters, and green means chlorophyll, and that means lots of nitrogen. Continuous cropping, 3 to 4 crops a year. Land is rented on 90-day basis. You can have the ground from today, and 90 days I'm renting that to somebody else, so you need to be out of there. Fertilizer is a small component of input costs. These figures come from UC Davis publications. The blue is the total cost of production. That's cash and non-cash cost, and the yellow is the fertilizer cost. Strawberries are $32,500 an acre annual cash cost for a strawberry crop. That's a biennial basis, but divided into an annual crop year. And fertilizer costs are about $700. You can see the other values there. For those are, again, from the UC Davis, include both cash and non-cash costs. But you can see the fertilizer costs are a very, very small component of the total cost of producing that crop. I guess I could say, hopefully as a joke, that working for a fertilizer company, I would love to see that yellow bar be a little bit bigger, but competition keeps it where it is. So anyway. So in the Central Coast Water Quality Control Board, what they did was to develop a tiered approach where they looked at 3 tiers, where they had a low risk, an intermediate, and a high risk. And that was based on the pesticides that were used, the nitrogen rates, and the amount of leaching potential that occurred within those areas, and the size of the individual farms. About 40% of that is in Tier 1, or fairly what they considered to be low risk. Almost half of that is in intermediate risk, and 15% is in high risk environments. So, regardless of whether you're in Tier 1, 2, or 3, you might think Tier 1, all I'm pretty well safe. Well, There's still an awful lot of paperwork and mandatory reporting required of growers. They have to submit electronic notice of intent, which provides information about the operation and the ranch. And by the way, these are not cows. I guess they consider lettuce to be cows because they're all called ranches. And I'm used to calling a place a farm, but those are ranches. You have to know about the irrigation, and based on that information, then you're assigned to a category. You have to have an annual update, and then again, if growers have any question, they can contact the Water Board staff. You have to develop or update a farm plan, and this had to be done 4 years ago. Identify all the water quality issues on the farm and for any nearby creeks and groundwater. Have water analysis, which looked at, and the elements of that plan were irrigation, pesticides, nutrients, salinity, sediment, and erosion control, and aquatic habitat. Had to introduce management practices. You had to adapt as you implemented those. That stayed on the farm. That did not have to be submitted, but it had to be completed and be available for inspection. Minimize bare dirt. As a soil scientist, I probably wouldn't have used that word, but I pulled these off their website. Minimize bare dirt, prevent erosion, and so forth. Install backflow protection. I think that's a common practice. That wasn't, hard for anybody to take care of that. If you abandoned a well, there was a procedure for doing that. You had to conduct groundwater monitoring. The primary irrigation well on the farm and all drinking water wells had to be measured, had to be monitored for nitrate, general minerals, other parameters, depth of the groundwater. The GeoTracker is the database into which that information was entered. There were surveys that had to be conducted on the surface waters that were receiving the tailwater and so forth from those fields. You look at metals, nutrients, pesticides, toxicity, and the invertebrates. Had to look at the flow rates in the wet and the dry seasons and so forth. A number of other reports that had to be prepared and submitted electronically. And obviously there is a cost to all of this. A small farm, 11 to 100 acres, less than 10 acres probably is more of a hobby, but 11 to 100 acres, you were looking at $800 to $1,200. On a 500-acre farm, that went to up to $5,000 to $6,500. Frankly, this kind of cost put against the value of the crop is not the burdensome part of this. It was developing the plans and the time and the effort and the resources that were devoted to doing so, which was the burden for the growers. Obviously, they'd have rather had that money in their pocket, but the huge burden they had to face was in all of the monitoring and all of the sampling and so forth as development in those plans. So, on the Central Coast, what they've come up with then, we have 4 R's of nutrient management, right? We talked about those. Rate, source, timing, and placement. And the only one that really matters in California is rate. They don't care what your source is. They don't care what the timing is. They don't care about placement. It's all about rate. So here's the form that's used in the Central Coast for the Tier 2 and 3 farms. They need information on the location, the acres, how much nitrogen is in the irrigation water, how much irrigation water is applied, so you know how much, then you go through the math, how much nitrogen is being applied, what the crop is that's going to be grown, and how much nitrogen will be applied to that crop. And these are all drop-down menus that when you click on those, and then you can, they drop down and you can just click and fill them in. This is the backside, or the second page of the form. They have up to 44 individual parcels. So if you talk about a 200-acre farm that's got 50-acre fields and have 4 crops a year, you can imagine how many of these have to be filled out for every crop, for every field, for every cycle. And then you have to say, what was the basis for the nitrogen recommendation or the nitrogen rate that was used? Was it UC research data, cooperative extension, a farm advisor consultation? Was it a crop advisor? You have to check all that apply, but you have to say, how did you know how much nitrogen to put on? Local info neighbor, in other words, talking over the fence, is one that is you can check it. This is essentially the drop-down menu page that shows the range of crops which could be grown in that area, and it literally goes in the upper left from alfalfa and the lower right to zucchini. Okay, so that's the Central Coast. And we will come back to the Central Coast a little bit later, but we're going to switch to the Central Valley, which is intensively managed, high-value, irrigated tree and row crops. There certainly are vegetables grown here, but it's much less significant than what it is over in the Central Coast. Things like almonds and citrus, pistachios, tomatoes, walnuts, a whole lot of other specialty crops. Over 400 different crops are grown in California for which you have to have this reporting information. Perennial and annual crops. In the case of the Central Coast, it's almost all, I say annual crops, they're really not even annual, they're three-month crops. But in the valley, in the Central Valley, we look at perennial crops, the tree crops, and then a substantial amount, but there they truly are annual crops. Perennial crops in a drought situation, we just finished up last year, the 2015-16 was the first year of normal rainfall. We had five dry ones before that. That creates real challenges because you have to water those perennial crops. You're not going to let a 30-year-old orchard die because you don't have water, and you'll pay about any price for it because you've got to keep it going. But you may not plant tomatoes or corn or cotton or any of the other annual crops because you just leave the ground fallow. In fact, if you happen to have the opportunity to drive up and down the Central Valley, there are, in areas that were marginally available for water, there are, and I should have brought pictures, there are large acreages, 1,000 acres, where they went in with the bulldozer and took out the almonds, and they just tipped them over and left them. They have no value, and they just took them out because of lack of water. Annual crops mean flexibility. If you have an annual crop and you don't have water, it's fallow ground, but you can't do that with a perennial. And again, rigorous quality standards, again, require growers to manage those crops very intensively. And as the case over in the Central Coast, fertilizer is a small part of the production cost. Again, these are total cost, cash cost, plus non-cash cost. Almonds, a little over $6,000 a year to grow an almond crop. Oranges are up about almost $9,000 an acre, or citrus generically. Tomatoes, about $3,000 an acre. And walnuts, over $4,000. And in all cases, you can see that even with the highest yellow is pretty small compared to all the other costs that are incurred for that grower. So, a little different plan in the Central Valley. In the Central Valley, they want to know how much nitrogen is applied or how much is available. And so you're looking at liquid and dry. You're looking at foliar nitrogen. How much nitrogen came from any organic material that was applied, any compost or manure. And you come up with the total nitrogen that was applied. And then how much is in the irrigation water, how much irrigation water was applied, and so forth. And you come up with the figure for how much nitrogen was put on in the irrigation water. And ultimately you end up with the amount of total nitrogen that was applied to the crop. And there's that's all done before and during crop production. At the end of production, they want the actual yield that you reported and the amount of nitrogen that was removed from the field. And you can either show a calculated value based on average values from UC Davis Research or UC Riverside. But there are pretty standard values for many of the crops. 70 pounds of nitrogen and 1,000 pounds of almonds, for example, or actually I think they use 67 pounds of nitrogen for 1,000 pounds of almonds, and for other crops they have those as well. Or you can sample the part of the crop that's removed from the field, have it sent to a lab, and use that value, do the math, and come up. But in the end, they have applied divided by removed. And we'll talk more about that in a minute. And then, certification method. Somebody has to certify that plan, and that's where the certified crop advisors come in. The very bottom category, and I apologize, the cut and paste, it doesn't read very well, but this is a nitrogen management specialist, which is by definition a certified crop advisor. There are other people as well. But that's where the ASA CCA program comes in, is that individual is authorized to legally sign off on that nitrogen management plan. Now, we'll talk about some issues that come up from that certification process a little bit later. So, Brother, we're talking the Central Coast or the Central Valley. There is some commonalities. They do consist of nitrogen application rates and removal rates. But not everybody does the rules. And this came out September. 67 growers were issued violation notices, and it doesn't say it in here. It came out in August, excuse me, and I have forgotten the figure, but I believe they were fined anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000, not because they put on too much nitrogen, because there's no nitrogen restriction. There's simply a reporting requirement, which they didn't file the reports, and they had substantial fines which were levied because they failed to submit their reports. I suspect they probably won't miss it next year. So, again, nitrogen management, so far, it's application and removal rates. The conversations I've had informally with members of the technical staffs of the water boards, and I'm speculating here and certainly wouldn't put a name with this or even a water quality board, at somewhere in the process there will be a management of that regulates the AR, the applied removed ratio, at some point, at some time. Now, if you think about it, of course, an AR ratio of 1 assumes a 100% nitrogen use efficiency. When was the last time you saw that? Are regulators going to require that the AR ratio be no more than 1? When the most efficient crop that we have in California is actually almonds, and research trials for, let me see, a 4-year study and a 5-year study by Patrick Brown, averaging 70% in some years getting into the 80s for nitrogen use efficiency from nitrogen applied ending up in the almond nut that leaves the field, of, again, exceeding 70%. In many years, but averaging 70 across all the studies, and that's probably the most efficient that we have. Will that be sufficient? Don't know. Will there be allowances for reasonable nitrogen use efficiency values? So, right now, we have a state water board that provides statewide leadership, and we have local or regional water quality control boards which then implement these plans, and again, they're different and fit the unique needs of those areas. The water boards submit plans to the state water board, which then approves those plans. They're different, but they all have received approval from the state water board. Information is gathered from the growers in those reporting forms, and then in the Central Coast, it is kept on an individual basis. In the Central Valley, that data was collated into by grower coalitions. And within the Central Valley, there were something like 19 or 13 different grower coalitions. And the data went to the coalition, which then combined the data, and the data became anonymous. And that data was then reported to the State Water Board. It was summed across fields, crops, nitrogen applied, nitrogen removed, and so forth. But it was consolidated and collated by a group so it could not be identified about a particular grower. Keep that mind, keep that thought in mind for a minute. There were no individual reports. The reporting requirements in the Central Valley were consistent across all farms, but in the coast, they varied depending on farm size and groundwater vulnerability. And as we speak, the coalitions are working to finalize the management practices evaluation plans. And these things are going to include stuff like soil testing and water analysis and application removal ratios and kind of looking to make sure that what they have been doing is sufficient and adequate. And there'll be other parts of those as well. And all of that came to naught because of a lawsuit from several groups in California. And threw it all out. And this is the latest information that I have. There were a number of points in these regional water quality plans that were challenged by the environmental groups, and they were successful in a lawsuit that was filed in Sacramento. Those plans, according to the lawsuit, and the judge agreed, those plans failed to demonstrate that they would mitigate water quality issues in a timely manner. Because there were no specific timelines in any of these plans, There were no threshold values to demonstrate compliance. The court said that merely implementing best management practices, the AR ratios and all the stuff I talked about on those earlier slides, did not prove mitigation of water quality issues. The court further ruled that an eventual compliance was inadequate. Furthermore, the tiered system did not provide equal compliance because only the large farms were required to maintain their AR ratios. And this was over on the coast. The State Water Board has appealed this ruling, and there's financial and other support from the ag groups as well. And so for right now, it's on hold. The plans that I talked about are moving forward against the backdrop that they've been found essentially illegal. It'll be appealed to the state Supreme Court, and at some point there'll be a decision that will come down from the state Supreme Court, which will say, yes, you could do what you were doing before, or no, you can't, you have to start over again. And you will have to have sampling, you will have to have demonstrated mitigation in a timely manner and so forth. But right now that's in court, and we don't know what's going to happen. So the status right now, State Water Board has issued additional amendments to what they were already doing. Again, they're moving forward to meet the timelines in the law, regardless of what's happening with the lawsuit. So things are moving on several different fronts here. But all growers will have to provide certified nitrogen management plans, certified by a certified crop advisor, although there are provisions for self-certification in some cases. Growers have to participate in public outreach education. These are not voluntary. This is not an extension meeting where you provide free lunch and hope to get growers. If growers do not attend and sign in and out, they'll be in violation of the law. They have to update their nitrogen management plans annually, and annually could mean crop year, and we could be doing that for a 90-day crop. Irrigation management will be part of that nitrogen management plan. And the nitrogen applied and removed will be reported on a field-by-field basis or individual crop and field basis no later than 2019. The coalitions will conduct data analysis of the farm evaluation and the nitrogen management plans, but the data will be reported by individual growers. And the reason that matters is that if a grower can be shown to be contaminating or contributing to the degradation of groundwater, they're subject to citizen lawsuits with treble damages on an individual farmer basis. Boards are going to have to develop regulatory AR ratios, but we don't know what those are. It might be 1.3, 1.6 might be acceptable, we don't know. All drinking water wells on the farms must be monitored at least twice a year, and all wells that don't meet drinking water standards must be remediated or replaced as needed. So we have several different things going on at once here. Future issues. What are the legal challenges facing a CCA who signs a nitrogen management plan and then the farmer's found to be in violation? You want to sign that nitrogen management plan? I know of several, and there are a number of independent, both pest control advisors and certified crop advisors in California. In most places where I work, you know, the Pacific Northwest, Arizona, other areas, CCAs are almost always tied to an individual retail fertilizer dealer. In California, there's a substantial chunk that are independent. About 25% are independent, and they simply provide nutrient management or pest control recommendations. Do you think I would sign one of those forms with treble damages and uncertainty about what the legal environment is going to be? Is nitrogen reporting going to turn into nitrogen rate application restrictions? How are nitrogen use efficiency, which is basically the inverse of the AR ratio, how are those going to be addressed? And finally, the great big issue which has to be addressed, but nobody wants to talk about it because it is the giant elephant in the valley, so to speak, is salt management. Salt removal is an absolute requirement for a sustainable irrigated agricultural system. The Central Valley receives right now more salt inflow than is removed in the outflow. Salt leaching is absolutely essential, and nitrate leaching is prohibited. How can we reconcile those two irreconcilable facts? We have to leach salt. We cannot, by law, leach nitrate. You tell me how we can deal with that in a sustainable system. I want to thank a few people that helped me on this here through various either conversations or I lifted slides out of their programs or in other ways. But any mistakes on this are mine alone, so don't blame anybody that I listed right here. And I want to thank you, and I think I have time for a couple of questions, I believe, Luther. Yeah, Terry. Just Terry. Terry, just a minute. In the end, playing the devil's advocate, Terry's question, of course, is there a move towards looking at different sources, at those products which have an enhanced efficiency fertilizers, basically we're talking about. While I think those are part of the practices that we can do which will improve the AR ratio, or the nitrogen use efficiency, I've not heard anybody that I've talked with on the technical staffs for any of the water boards pay more than lip service attention to those types of products. It's all going to come down to how much nitrogen is going on the field, how much is going off in the crop, with the assumption that the difference is leached. And I mean, agronomically, we can talk at length about that assumption, but that's the regulatory assumption that we have to face and deal with. And the subtleties of timing and better sources are lost in that process. It's truly frustrating to be in a room with regulators and agronomists at the same time because they don't even have the same language. Who's responsible for monitoring the groundwater? Okay, it comes down to the responsible party, and you know, I don't know the answer to that, I don't know if it's the renter or the individual who owns the land. It does have to be done, and in fact, on that form, it talks about the responsible party, and that responsible party is the definition of that term is covered on the instructions for the form, but I don't have that memorized. I'm not sure who has to do it. I will tell you, though, that all of that water monitoring has to be done by a third party, has to be sent to a certified lab and so forth. You, as the farmer or the renter, can't turn on the well for an hour and take a mason jar and fill it with water and take it to the lab. Not going to work. You have to have it done by a third party, completely separate from the farming operation. I'm sorry. Well, 10 parts per million nitrogen, 45 parts per million nitrate, nitrogen, and that's one of the issues you have to be careful when you're reading it, because they talk about nitrate or they talk about nitrogen, it's 10 or 45. I'm sorry.
In terms of determining that these interventions will achieve the outcomes that are required by law, how well do we understand the way nitrogen moves in these reads to know whether we will achieve those kinds of outcomes?
I'm not sure. And if I understood your question correctly, that's it's frustrating because from a regulatory standpoint, good agronomy, the use of better products, the better nitrogen management and so forth isn't part of the equation. It comes down to, is there more nitrogen being applied than is being removed from the field? And there's going to be some flexibility, I think, in the end on that, but I don't know how much. My read on it is that if you've got data from UC Riverside or Davis that, you know, the kind of the gold standard for external data, and it says that almonds are 70% nitrogen efficient, they might buy that. I don't know. The assumption, again, though, is that that 30% is going to the groundwater. And if you're a regulatory agency charged by law with protecting the groundwater of California from further degradation, actually to improve it, it's hard against the legal backdrop of being sued by the Coast Watch and the Otter Keepers and other groups to allow any application that can't be taken up by the crop. And yet we as agronomists know that's not going to happen. That's a whole other can of worms. And of course, California, just to make it interesting, California has passed laws about greenhouse gas emissions. What's the largest emitter of nitrous oxide in California? It's agriculture. And certain farming practices that we would, anyway, I don't want to get into that, but it becomes, there's the regulatory world in which California farmers and fertilizer dealers and pesticide companies sell is on a different scale than anywhere in the country that I'm aware of. So far, all, and I've read the laws and so forth, and the not only the law but how the bureaucrats are writing the management of it. And so far, agriculture is being exempt from the water quality laws. But if you look at the quantity of nitrous oxide that's emitted and some of the other greenhouse gases, I think that we will be looking at those somewhere in the near future. So, anyway, I don't want to intrude into anybody else's time. Thank you.